At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
You're listening to continuing coverage in the suitcase murder, the trial of Sarah Boone, from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
Trauma on his fingers as well. So now, the sheriff's office, Orange County Fire Rescue show up, and the defendant interacts with the first patrol officer. You will see and hear that body worn camera. It's more of the same of what we heard on the 911 call. Hide and seek. It was good. I fell asleep. I don't know what happened. A few hours later, the detectives from the homicide unit of the Orange County Sheriff's Office approach her and are ready to interview her after doing some initial things, which includes grabbing her cell phone, off of a counter that was found at a suitcase by Mr. Torres, and giving it to one of their digital forensic examiners, who we'll hear from later in the trial, Janelle Wong. But it's time to give a first interview with the defendant. So they do a first interview with the defendant in one of their unmarked detective patrol cars there on the scene. And the basics of this remain the same, but there's a little more elaboration, as you would expect from trained detectives versus getting the 911 call taken. But the basics of what the defendant tells them is, we had wine, we painted, we drew, we did puzzles. The particular wine we had was a Chardonnay from the Woodbridge winery. The bottles, plural, are in the trash. We started about 4 p.m. after Mr. Torres went to the store. Puzzles, art, listening to music, enjoying each other's company. We were just literally just enjoying one another's company. The other bottle of wine that was left over from Boer wasn't even half full. So the description she is saying is one bottle of wine and plus a fraction of a bottle of wine left over from the night before. Ladies and gentlemen, not all bottles of wine are made the same. Many of us may envision what you would expect at a restaurant. Those are 750s, 750 milliliters of that. Bottles of wine that were recovered from the defendant's trash can were 1.5 liters, so the equivalent of two standard bottles of wine. A 1.5 liter bottle of wine is 50 ounces. Given that a standard serving of wine is 5 ounces, you can begin to do the math. And there's receipts. The day before, Saturday, February 22nd, 2020, there is a receipt from Publix for a bottle of Woodbridge wine for $9.74. And then Sunday at 12:17 p.m., there is another receipt for $9.74 for a Woodbridge Chardonnay bottle of wine. And then at about 5:30 in the afternoon on February 23rd, again, there is another receipt for the same bottle of wine for the same price. And those two bottles of wine were recovered. They're going to be produced to you in evidence, and you will see that they are, in fact, Magnum bottles of wine. So that's the context of, that we're dealing with when we hear things like, we only had one bottle of wine, and we finished what was left in the bottle of wine from before. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's two 1.5 liters that apparently were consumed by a 103-pound man and the defendant, who is in the same weight class. Plus, if you believe that the defendant and the decedent would leave leftover wine from any given day, any additional wine that was remaining from the 1.5 liters from Saturday. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a lot of wine. So in that context, we were just having wine, enjoying each other's company. At one point, we play hide and seek. She says she didn't zip it up all the way. There was enough room, and her words again, there was enough room for his little fingers to get out. We were still having a good time and whatever. And basically, you know, Mr. Torres is stressing out about jobs, his ex-wife, about money. And so they're just doing puzzles and doing things to keep his mind off of it. Doing art, playing with the dogs, dancing with the dogs, playing hide and seek. We were always trying to outdo each other where we could find each other the best. When they started playing hide and seek, she went up to the shower and then got tired of hanging out in the shower and came down, and that's when she found him playing around in the suitcase. We both thought it was funny. I'm gonna zip you up. Two little fingers could stick out. And she went upstairs thinking, he'll get out, we're gonna have sex and go to sleep and call it a day. It was a good day. She insists that they had wine, but were not drunk. You will be able to assess that for yourselves when you hear the recording she made. No ill will between us last night. Last argument, maybe last week. Don't really argue. We came home, drink, smoke, did art, listen to music, play with the dogs. We drink what we can afford. We used to be able to afford liquor, but now we can only afford wine. And that's how that day ends with the police. She goes and sleeps and stays at her ex-husband's house the night of February 24th and the 25th. What they are doing, and by they I mean the Orange County Sheriff's Office in part, is going through her phone. That's when they discover the two videos that I just described for you. And there's other things in the phone, which I will discuss with you in a little bit. But she's summoned in for another interview, and she sits down and gives another interview on February 25th, now Tuesday. She does describe past instances of violence. You're going to hear about that. She's going to say, Mr. Torres had hit her with a curtain rod about a month ago. Since then, though, like, we've been good. I've been good. She describes that he comes at her all the time. He comes at me. So it's either I flee or I try to go upstairs and go to sleep. That's usually what it is. I don't know if you talk to Brian, her husband, about any of that, but most of the time I flee and I go over there. There's a discussion about why she stays with him, and you'll hear that for yourself. She will say that she doesn't really want to drink. She just takes an occasional drink. She drinks to placate him, Mr. Torres. She says that you're going to see phone videos of Mr. Torres smashing her TV in the past, like a month earlier. You may see that too. But she doesn't get drunk. When she drinks, she likes being non compos mentis, her words, not mine, having her wits about herself. Then she gets to the hide and seek again and describes that they've played it three times before, but had never zipped one another shut in it before. And they were really just running out of places to hide because it's just a townhome. She does not remember, according to her, she does not remember taking any photos or videos of the night's events. At this point, they ask her, well, would you like to see it? And she says, I can't watch this. I flipped him over, and that's where it was. Guys, this is killing me right now. That's why I flipped it over between the two videos. I didn't do anything intentional. Discussion over whether he had enough room to get any of his fingers out from the zipper. My intention was not to leave him there. We both got in there. Both of us were in there. When she went upstairs, my plan was not to, quote, he'll be up here any minute. My plan wasn't to leave him in the suitcase. Why is all this going on? It's the drinking. That's what it is. It's the drinking. I thought he was okay. Guys, that's how we were with each other. Nobody understands our relationship. This whole suitcase thing never happened before, though she described it happening before. I'll never drink alcohol again. She insists that she has no injuries on her. And you don't have to take her word for it, because they took photographs of her and there were no injuries on her. She insists over and over that there was no violence that day. It's like, okay, we're in a good place right now. They ask her about saying fuck you to Mr. Torres. Well, that's just being playful and having a good day. Everybody's having a good day. I didn't touch him, nor did he touch me. Her words. What else is found on her phone? There's a conversation between Mr. Torres's brother, and again, nobody knows who's using these phones at the time text messages are sent in these records that you're going to see. But it's indicated that there is a communication between one of the decedent's brothers and the owner of the phone that was taken that belongs to Ms. Boone. The text from the brother is, yo, my daughter told me what you did, Sarah. I don't want you around any of my daughters or nieces and nephews. And that's Christmas 2019, just under 2 months before this event. She replies, or the person using her device at this time, ugh, your quote-unquote dad hit me in the face. The next text is, hide and seek, I shall. January 13th, there's another heated discussion. She describes it on January 13th in a text to Mo, the brother again. It's a Torres thing. Boo. Sends a picture. Keep the fugly creep out too. It's still fugly. Lose. The brother responds, please do something with yourself, Sarah. God bless you. The defendant's response, and bless you and all of you too. I'll get, in all capitals, rid of him. Then it'll be, in all capitals, better. Ugh, Torres, referring to Mr. Torres, getting rid of. And that's the case. But we, the state of Florida, and the members of the jury in our journey through this case, we're all going to come up to a door that says, danger, keep out, stay away, by court order. And that door says, the defendant's history with the victim. It is a door we shall not enter without permission and invitation. Halloween's in like 13 days. Part of the vampire lore is vampires can't come get you in your own house.
participate during this trial, we're going to be invited in to the defendant's past relationship for the previous couple of years with Mr. Torres. And as we come inside this room, at her beckoning, we are going to have things pointed out that she would like us to focus on. And you're going to hear the first night the defendant met the decedent, Mr. Torres, he smashes her phone, punches her. It's the first time in her life she'd ever been punched, I expect as the testimony would be. And he made her curl up in a fetal position on her own porch for 4 hours, and she was only able to escape this situation when he fell asleep. I expect that you're going to hear that Mr. Torres is an alcoholic. I expect you may hear his high score on his blood alcohol level was a 3.42 once when he got treated at the hospital. This is a man who had serious alcohol problems, and I expect you're going to hear about that. Despite that first date, and this is going to tie into some other things that I expect could possibly come in, despite that first date, despite at that point in time of this first date not having a relationship, emotional ties, and the things that come along with a relationship that make it harder to break off a relationship, it's one thing to have a bad first date, it's another thing to end a 25-year marriage. Despite that first date, there's a second and a third. Now, these days are at bars, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it just typically ends up, she's going to tell you, I suspect, or you're going to hear that she said, one way or another. It's one thing or the other. Like, I ask a dude for a cigarette, Mr. Torres flips out, and I'm going to pay the price. Just things like that. And you're going to hear and potentially see, yes, there were injuries that the defendant is going to attribute to the victim causing her. Black eyes. Cuts in the face, perhaps from the curtain rod incident that was mentioned in the police interview happening about a month before this. Bloody ear. A stab wound in the leg, which is perhaps described as sword fighting playing around in medical records. But nonetheless, I suspect you're going to hear and see a lot about their past history. And at the end, if this occurs, if this comes in, the state is going to have the opportunity to take lead of the tour in this room labeled the defendant and the victim's past history. And I'm not going to go into that now. If this all comes to fruit, the fruit blooms on the tree or in the trial, we'll discuss it at the end where it's more appropriate. But I'm asking you to not rush to judgment until you hear all of the evidence in the case. And then apply whether or not these past instances have anything to do with what happened on February 23rd. Now, like a home inspector, there are experts to come in and kind of help walk everybody through this room labeled the defendant and the victim's past relationship. I suspect there's a chance you may hear from some experts, psychologists and psychiatrists, about battered spouse syndrome. The state is not challenging in any way that battered spouse syndrome exists. It's well recognized, the experts will tell you all about it. Not disputing that at all. But there's some things that we would hope that you pay attention to during all the testimony, if there is any, about this subject matter. One is that it's not actually a recognized diagnosis in the Bible that they use in mental health called DSM-5-DR. Diagnostic Statistical Manual, version 5, and I think it's text revision, something like that. What it is, and what they describe it as, is kind of a component of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. But because it's not actually in the book, it's like a recipe book. It's like our statute books for lawyers. You go into this book and say you have a particular disorder or diagnosis, it'll say, well, all of us agree that it needs these three elements, like elements of crime. Some of these elements have to be prevalent for a certain amount of time, so on and so forth. You imagine, it's a cookbook. Gives you the recipe for a diagnosis. But because it's not in the cookbook, you may get some disagreement about what it means between the experts, because it's kind of like grandma's recipe handed down from generation to generation without being right. But what I expect you'll hear is, it's important for people who don't have experience in certain abusive relationships that are violent to understand the control that can be exerted over an intimate partner by the other one, isolation, psychological violence, emotional violence, physical violence, sexual violence, which I suspect will be described for you as well by the defendant, perpetrated on her by the deceased. You'll hear about all this. And what it ties into at the end of the day, after we talked about this during jury selection, is if there is a self-defense instruction read to you, this is to help you understand what an objective and reasonable person in the circumstances would do. Because years ago, we've gotten better as a society, but years ago when this was first being researched, the question would be, well, why wouldn't you leave? And battered spouse syndrome and the testimony from these experts help explain those things to people. Well, it's not that easy. You got to look at what's going on in the relationship, the isolation, the control, so on and so forth. And that explains why you wouldn't leave. Well, now, but turning to the facts of our case, what you're going to decide the facts are is ordinary, objective, reasonable person in those circumstances taking those actions if you get a self-defense instruction as part of that. That's what it's used for. It's not used for explaining the subjective beliefs that one holds. What you will also hear about these things is, just like any other doctor or any expert, like a home inspector. If a home inspector's report was based solely on the person who's trying to sell the house, what they say about the house, great shape. I rewired the entire thing. Brand new JVC pipes. This sucker's good to go. It's highly priced at $600,000. You're not going to take that home inspector's report unless they lift the hood, kick the tires, do all the things that the Fox on Carfax does. You want an expert to get reliable information. An expert's opinion is only as good as the information that he or she relies on. They will say, yeah, you gotta take into account the credibility of the person who's giving you the story. Even if it's the patient, the client that is saying, all these things happened to her. You gotta find proper information. You gotta check reliability. Particularly, the circumstances that we will discuss in the case. So another thing that they're going to tell you is, just because there's a bunch of violent nonsense going on between two intimate partners doesn't mean that spouse syndrome applies. Some people can go home and fight like cats and dogs, and that's just their day, and they get over it, they live their life to fight another day. Their cycle just spins like that. So just because you hear about those things, what the experts will tell you, it doesn't mean that it necessarily applies. If this testimony comes in, I expect that Dr. Harper will say that it applies to Ms. Boone. But we'll talk to her about what she relied upon to make that conclusion. We'll talk to her about some other things and take that journey together to get there. But at the end of the day, after you hear all of the evidence in this case, particularly straight from the horse's mouth to the video, where you don't have to rely upon the credibility of anything other than your own two eyes and your own two ears, state's meant that you're going to return a guilty verdict for second-degree murder. What the evidence is going to show is that the defendant killed Mr. Torres because she decided he deserved it. Not because the evidence will show an objective, reasonable person in her circumstances needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jay. Any opening remarks by the defense?
Judge, can we invoke the rule if it has been?
I've already advised the witnesses.
Okay, the rule of sequestration will be invoked. Thank you.
Thank
you. You may proceed, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Appreciate y'all being here. I was introduced before. My name is James Owens. And I represent Sarah Boone, along with Tony Henderson and Kevin Bennett. Now, this is going to be a 7-day trial. Obviously, today, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday. We're not sure. But we're trying to make arrangements for witnesses to fly in, expert witnesses and whatnot. And we'll know more probably at the end of the day, maybe Monday, so we can plan. I know your focus is on this case because you took it out to do so. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no higher call than to lie on me. No higher call than to lie on me. And we're going to ask you again in the case to write this down. And find Sarah Boone not guilty because she was justified in the force that she used to defend yourself. If that force was reasonable under the circumstances that existed between Sarah Boone and George Torres. Sarah Boone and George Torres were down and out, as you can be. Their life centered around alcohol. Both of them suffered from, used to be called alcoholism, now it's called alcohol abuse syndrome. And so day to day, they struggle with the use of alcohol. You can imagine that. It affected their jobs. It affected keeping employment. It affected even getting a job. As codependent as you can be towards each other. And you're going to learn with all that was domestic violence. And that George Torres physically abused Sarah Boone. And she suffered from the effects, the psychological effects that one suffers from repeat violence from an intimate partner. They were together over 3 years, and there were several prior incidences of violence. We've got the photographs. There were incidences where police were called who took photographs. So you're going to be able to see the evidence. And we believe the court will instruct you at the end when you're considering self-defense, which we call justifiable use of non-deadly force or justifiable use of deadly force, that you can consider the prior acts, the history of violence, the prior difficulties that the parties had, in considering her set of circumstances that she was faced with in making the decision to use reasonable force under the circumstances. And the most important thing I can tell you here today is keep an open mind. There's two sides to every story. You're going to hear the state's side, them attempting to paint her a certain way.
as they've done here today in opening statement. And then you're going to hear another side. And you're going to have to weigh that. All the evidence. The credibility of the witnesses. The photographs, the videotapes. And come to a conclusion. Now let's talk about this day, February 23rd of 2020, the date of this event. This case has been pending for some time. Here we are, October of 2024. I think the evidence is going to show that they had purchased some wine the day before, but they hadn't finished all of that. So it was in the refrigerator. Many times that's how they start their day. At some point, you're going to see a video from Publix, from where they live. I believe it's Winter Park. But Publix was not too far from their apartment complex. And they took their car, they drove over there. So you're going to see a videotape from Publix of them both going in the store about noon. And they come out with one of those larger bottles of the wine. And then, of course, there's a receipt. And the bottles are in the garbage can. Of course, there obviously is an attraction between the two. And as everybody knows, couples can have great times where things click, everybody gets along, and then we can have episodes of disagreement. And how are those resolved? Really, is what this is about. How are disagreements resolved? But George was very jealous of Sarah. And you're going to hear the testimony about that. And that he cannot, in certain situations, he can be very charming. But when his level of intoxication gets to a certain level, is when he gets sad, moody, and a lot of times eventually it involved forcible sex with Sarah Boone or actual physical violence against her. They bought the wine. It's a simple life. They don't have much money. But they both like art. They did that for a while. They both like puzzles. They did that for a while. Well, about five or so, the wine bottle was gone. And George had said, I want to go get some cigarettes. So there's a convenience store right close by their apartment complex. And Sarah thought he was just going to walk over there and get cigarettes and come back. But no, what he did was he got her keys, he got her debit card, and he went over to the Publix and he got another bottle. And I think that was about 5:30, something like that. And again, there'll be the Publix video showing him going in and going out, and there'll be a receipt for the purchase of that bottle, and then there'll be that bottle. We'll be in the garbage can along with the other bottle. Well, when he comes in with the second bottle, Sarah knows. This is not good. She knows this means he's going to get to another level of intoxication. So, Sarah's concerned. So she attempts to placate him, keep him busy, keep him in a good mood. They drink that bottle, or she drinks as well. And at some point, they're intoxicated at a high level. As some people do when they're drunk, they get silly. And they decide to play a game of hide and seek. She goes upstairs, their bedroom's upstairs, to the shower and waits for a period of time. And he doesn't come to her. At some point, she gets cold, she gets tired. She wants to go see, well, maybe we got it mixed up. Where is he? So she goes downstairs, and they had gotten a suitcase down a week or so ago. It's an old suitcase that they were going to donate to Helping Hands or Goodwill or somebody, and they were putting some items in there. And it's a broken down suitcase. It's a large suitcase. They both weigh about 100 pounds. And they don't eat good. Malnourished to a large degree. But the pull handle is broken off. And they've attached a little paper clip. It's got the rubber around it, and that's how they move it back and forth. Well, she comes down the steps. She sees him getting in and settling in the suitcase. So she walks over there, and you know they see each other. They smile and laugh, and she zips him up. And she zips him up, and they laugh for a while. And they carry on. She sits on the couch. And at some point, he says, I can't breathe. Now, his face is facing the zipper, and she's got 2 or 3 inches that she's opened it. And she doesn't know. They're intoxicated. She doesn't know whether he's just saying that to try to get her to get him out or what. But he's a captive audience. Physically, they're the same size, but he's much stronger than her. If they got in a fist fight, he would win 100 times out of 100. But she's got him now. He claims he can't get up. He has to sit and listen. It's a unique form of physical restraint. And so she lets him have it. Says things she shouldn't say. You'll see the video. It's about 2 minutes long. She videotapes it. She sits on the couch and turns her phone on and videotapes it for about 2 minutes. There's another video that's approximately 11 minutes later. The first video, the suitcase is flipped upside down. The zipper's on the bottom. 11 minutes later, Sarah has flipped it right side up. Again, open for him to get out. And it's only 22 seconds. And you hear George say, Sarah. And that's it. Now, the key to the case is that 11 minutes and what happened during that 11 minutes, okay? That is the key to this case. Sarah Boone will take the stand. She will explain what happened. She will explain why it happened. The evidence will show that she was justified in the action she took to prevent an attack from George Torrance, which the law acknowledges that every one of us has a right to invoke, the right of self-defense. You're going to hear from the medical examiner. She is going to tell you about some bruising on George Torrance. Of course, he was in the suitcase a while, deceased, we believe. And that changes things a little bit, as the medical examiner will explain, but there's some bruising. Sarah's going to explain that to you. Why that happened? What were the circumstances surrounding that? Involving a bat. Her son, comes and stays with them from time to time. He has his own room. He has several of his things there. And there's a bat downstairs. The same bat that George Torres used, and there's a video where George is threatening Sarah. And he's swinging the bat at the TV about as hard as he can. And he does it about six or seven times. You'll see it. Sarah's recording it. And it's during an argument. And he's trying to intimidate. Sarah loved you. You know, you're going to hear why women don't leave. Why women don't leave. And you're going to hear about Sarah Boone and her struggles, her mental health struggles. Sarah had no intent to kill. The prosecutor mentioned she wanted him to die. Farthest from the truth, she loved the man. She hated the abuse. She couldn't leave him. She tried. She tried kicking him out six or seven times. He kept coming back. She changed the locks. He kept coming back. She didn't have the family. She didn't have the support. She was weak. Vulnerable. You're going to hear it all. You've got to take that all into account to try to understand what happened and the circumstances surrounding this tumultuous relationship. Now, you're going to find that Sarah's not perfect. And, you know, as many of us do when we drink too much, you know, you sleep in. She slept in. 11, 12, 1, somewhere around there. She moseys downstairs looking for George. She thought he was on the computer looking for a job. She looked outside, maybe he's out smoking a cigarette. And she sees the suitcase. She unzips it. She gets him out. He's purple. She tries her best to do some CPR. She freaks out. The only family she's got is her ex-husband, really. She relies on him. As the prosecutor said, a lot of times she'll flee to her ex-husband's house where her son is at, Lucas. It's the only thing she knows to do. She was kind of a sheltered daughter when she was younger. She's smart, but she's not worldly. She calls Brian. Look, what do I do? He said, I'm coming over. Please, please come over. He's about 5 minutes away. And she calls him again within a couple of minutes. Yeah, I'm on the way. He gets there. He walks in the foyer and sees his legs. He said, call 911. She calls 911 within a minute or two. Detective Rodriguez arrives. You know, they've got the body cam now, so it's recorded. So you're going to hear Sarah talking. But Sarah's freaking out. Sarah's thinking, and I'm somehow responsible. eventually, she gives a statement to law enforcement. She gives one to Detective, or Deputy Rodriguez. Of course, she's not the homicide investigator. She's just responding. She's the first responder. And, you know, they know what to do. They try to assess the situation. They start putting the tape out. And then they call for the homicide investigators to come, which takes a little time. So she gets a statement from Sarah. Eventually, the homicide detectives get a statement from Sarah and the one of the unmarked squad cars. And it's recorded. They hear that. And then the next day, they take Sarah's phone. Sarah gives them the phone, signs the consent to take the phone, take it to, they have a phone extraction people at the sheriff's department where they can take it and take out all the data, all your phone calls, text messages, photographs, videos, all that. And they find these two videos. Sarah is not aware, she doesn't remember making the video. You can imagine. She gives them the phone. Of course, she makes no attempts to do anything other than, here's the phone. So they tell her, you're going to get your phone back tomorrow. We'll bring it back to you tomorrow. Well, they end up having a conversation with the female detective, homicide detective, Copsell is her name, Chelsea Copsell. And they end up, Deputy Copsell is pregnant, or Detective Copsell is pregnant. So they end up, hey, we're not going to bring your phone. I'm not feeling good. I'm pregnant. Can you come to the sheriff's department? Which Sarah Boone was to tell you that was what I was going. That's what they told me I was going to the sheriff's department for. Well, instead, it was an interrogation. And they were going to arrest her. They made their mind up already. And they were going to confront her and try to get her to confess based on the two videotapes. And so there's approximately a two-hour interrogation that was on the 25th in the afternoon when she got there to get her phone. They said, well, we got to come up here. We need to talk to you. And they got her in the room. It's a small room, but it's being videotaped and audiotaped. And it goes on for about 2 hours of them trying to get a confession to murder. It doesn't happen. But Sarah lies. She's scared. She can tell they're trying to pin her on this, that this was some kind of intentional act, and it was not. So she lies. She's not a lawyer. She doesn't know about self-defense. She doesn't understand she has a lawful right to defend herself. She doesn't understand that she's justified in using the force that she used. I wasn't there to advise her. No lawyer was there. So she lied. And you're going to hear that. So you're going to have to balance that versus her taking the stand and testifying before you. And we simply ask that you look for the evidence of cooperation of her testimony. It's going to be later, probably next week. The judges will tell you and read an instruction on evaluating a witness's credibility. And they'll talk about cooperative evidence, other evidence that's consistent with the testimony that Sarah Boone will give you. So you're going to have to weigh that in her testimony. Now, self-defense, you know, we talked about it in jury selection, usually a gun, some deadly weapon. The suitcase in this case was a physical restraint or a blocking of an attack, but it was unconventional. Self-defense, nonetheless. Now, as I said, the struggles that occurred, many of them involved the police. So you're going to actually hear from some of the police officers. Maybe some body cam footage. You're going to see some photographs that they took of the injuries to Sarah Boone. And some of the videos you may see of her in a very happy, joyful type of thing. Well, number one, she's intoxicated. Number two, she's safe, at least over there. So her attitude is not one of distress. You know, we're here today, full packed courtroom. Judge Granite's here, but you're the most important people. Because you've got to decide this case honestly, fairly, and according to the law. And we talked about the two biggest principles from the Constitution that apply. In this case, and in every case in which a citizen like Sarah Boone is brought into a courtroom and accused of a crime, the first is, you as a juror must presume or believe that Sarah is innocent. And that belief stays with you throughout the entire trial. Because of that, she doesn't have to prove anything. That's why the state went first in jury selection. That's why the state went first today. That's why the state will go first putting on their case. They have the burden of proof, and it's the highest burden we recognize in any type of litigation in this country. Proof beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. You are going to have doubts about this case. But the most important thing is not to rush to judgment, to keep an open mind and understand there's two sides to this case. There's their side and there's our side. So you can't form any fixed opinions early on. That's hard to do, as Mr. Henderson said in opening or in jury selection. That's extremely hard to do. Now you're going to hear some testimony. There's been mention of experts. Battered women's experiences affect her perception of imminent danger. Battered women's experiences affect her perception of imminent danger. Victims of repeat violence may fear death in a situation others would not. After hearing both sides of this case, we're confident you're going to have a reasonable doubt. And we're going to ask you to follow the law and do justice in this case. And find Sarah Boone not guilty, because it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Can the parties approach for a moment? State, you may call your first witness.
State, we're calling Juan Torres.
Sir, good morning. You could be seated. And once seated, if you could state and spell your name for the record for us, please.
Juan Torres, J-U-A-N-T-O-R-R-E-S.
Thank you, sir. You may inquire, Mr. Cacciatore.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Can you tell us how it is that you know George Torres?
He's my older brother.
And How many siblings do you have?
Six.
Six or seven.
And how long has your family resided here in the Central Florida area?
20 plus years.
And before residing in the Central Florida area, were you guys in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania?
Yes, sir. In Massachusetts.
Your brother, how often, your brother George, that is, how often would you talk with him?
Often we would talk, I would say, on a weekly basis.
And how far away did you live from George?
About 5-10 minutes, pretty close.
Would you see him pretty often?
I would try not to go there too much.
Who was George living with at the time that he passed away?
Wait, Sarah.
And without getting into many details, what was your relationship like with Sarah?
We didn't really have a relationship.
Would it be fair to say you didn't get along with her?
Yes.
Back on February 23rd, 2020, did you have an occasion to talk to your brother on that day?
Yes, sir.
And when you spoke with your brother on that day, did you FaceTime with him or did you speak with him over the phone?
We talked on the phone.
Was that phone to your ear or was that phone?
It was on speaker.
And who was present?
My wife and my two kids.
And without telling us anything that George may have said to you, can you tell us what the topic of that conversation was?
We were just talking like we normally did. He just calling me to check on me, basically.
Now, in the background of that conversation on the evening of February 23rd, 2020, what did you hear?
Sarah's in the background yelling.
And you recognized her voice?
Yes, sir.
What was she yelling about?
Something about choking or how he choked her. I really don't. That was it.
About how long was this conversation that you had?
Maybe 10 minutes, I think it was.
How did the conversation end?
Because she was yelling in the background, so that was it. We just talked about.
Did she sound upset?
She sounded upset.
Did you talk to your brother after that conversation?
No, that was the last conversation I had.
Have you ever spoken to Sarah since that conversation?
No.
I have no further questions.
Any cross-examination?
In the beginning, when you started, it was hard for me to hear, but I know you were talking about other siblings, other family members that you had here. Could you repeat that for me, please?
Here in Orlando, I have One sister and three brothers.
Sister and three brothers?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, did your brother George Torres, did he ever stay with you at any time?
No.
Would he ever live with you or any of, I mean, not you, but any of your other siblings?
No.
All right, sir, let's go back to this phone call that you were talking about that was on February 23rd of 2020, and that phone call was approximately 7:30, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, and who called who?
He called me.
And then y'all were talking, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, and when he called you, did you notice anything about his speech or his voice?
No, he was fine.
Sounded normal?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So he wasn't slurring his words or anything like that?
No.
By the way he talked or what he talked to you about, could you tell at that time if he had been consuming alcohol?
No, because I knew when he was... when he would drink.
Okay. So, in your opinion at that time, based on what you heard and what he was talking about, you do not believe he had been drinking alcohol?
No.
Now, you said you heard Sarah.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct? How did you know it was Sarah?
I can tell her voice.
You recognized her voice. So you could hear her, is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And you've heard Sarah speak before this, before that time, is that correct?
Yes.
And you've heard her speak on the phone before that time, is that correct?
Yes.
And you said that Sarah was yelling. Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
And she was yelling about, "He's choking me." Or tell him about choking me.
Yes.
Okay. During that conversation, and you heard her say that, did you ask your brother, what is she talking about?
No, I did not.
Did that statement at that time, did that statement surprise you?
Not really.
You've heard it before?
No.
Based on Sarah's voice that you've heard, was it any indication to you that she had been drinking?
No.
No? Sir, at some point your brother said he had to go, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And did he hang up on the conversation?
Yes.
And did he say bye and you say bye?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I don't have... if I can confirm.
You may, sir.
Sir, other than siblings, your mother and father, do they live in this area?
Yes.
Were there times that George would stay with them?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. No further questions.
Any redirect examination?
No, Your Honor.
Can this witness be released?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense?
Actually, we'll keep him subject to recall, Your Honor.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
All right, sir. You're released subject to recall by either party. Thank you.
State would call Devin Jamro.
Continuing coverage in the suitcase murder, the trial of Sarah Boone is on the way from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.